This is Edward Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Howard Tolman, the CEO of 1871, the digital startup incubator in Chicago. Howard Tolman is known as the godfather of the technology scene. In addition to 1871, he's an adjunct professor at Northwestern University School of Management and a lecturer at the law school. He saw 1871, which he started several years ago, as the opportunity to put Chicago on the world technology map. Change is happening so fast, it's very difficult to comprehend. He used an interesting example of the hospitality industry. $34 billion in revenue for Marriott Corporation, $20 million in revenue for the Hilton Corporation, billion rather, and $31 billion for Airbnb. Marriott and Hilton have several hundred thousand employees, Airbnb only 3,000 employees. When 1871 started, there were 50 startups and 50,000 square feet of space, May of 2012. Now that incubator in the Merchandise Mart has 500 startups, 200 members, 800 volunteer mentors, a 50-50 split among entrepreneurs between men and women, 20,000 visitors each month, and 1,400 events and meetings a year take place in 1871. From only having one school, they now have five schools they're working with, seven universities on site, 12 major technology partners, and 100 corporate sponsors. Tolman says the goal is for 1871 to be the high-tech incubator capital of the United States, and it could happen sooner than people think it may not. One of the goals is to turn ideas into invoices. Tolman believes that technology will continue to grow and prosper in the city of Chicago because innovation isn't age or gender bound. Creation, he completed his address by saying, creation depends on people embracing ideas and then working towards their achievement.
I'm happy to be here. I don't know if this will be my last presentation or not. I guess that's right. All right, so I want to talk about 1871. I think you all know that it's the year of the Chicago Fire, which is a little bit like naming your new enterprise Titanic Inc. It's a little confusing for folks. But post the fire, there was a tremendous renaissance, and the Ferris wheel was invented in the skyscraper in that important food group, the Twinkie. And so about 6 years ago, the idea with 1871 was that technology would represent that kind of an opportunity for the city to put itself on the national map and, in fact, on the global map around technology. And that's so important because of what's going on in the world in so many different respects. One of the amazing things is just to understand how the world is changing. So in 1990, the car industry, which was about $250 billion worth of revenue, was supported by 1.2 million employees. Today, if you took a snapshot of the big three tech companies, which are doing about $300 billion, 137,000 employees, 10 to 1. And this is frightening. This is where we're going to have to deal with millions and millions of displaced and replaced and changed circumstances. And everything in our lives is subject to this kind of change. And the change is happening at a rate that's so fast that we don't even understand it. We take for granted so many years ago, about 10 years ago, the BlackBerry, which was on everybody's hip. And if you look at what has happened, and this was not simply because of the iPhone, it was because the Apple platform was an open platform. 2 billion apps were downloaded to the App Store from the App Store before BlackBerry caught up and had a store of its own. And there isn't an industry today that is protected. If you want to get some idea of just how dramatic it is, look at what's going on in hospitality. So Marriott is the big player, $34 billion in market cap. Hilton is about half that size. And right in the middle is this little thing called Airbnb. Now, what's astonishing is that these two giants have about 400,000 employees to support these market caps. If you look at Airbnb, 3,500 employees, 100 to 1. And that's just the beginning. And so driven by change, driven by a platform, driven by technology, driven by the ability to code and such an important skill set. And so, you know, we're basically right in the midst of this revolution, and it couldn't be more exciting. We're at the Merchandise Mart. I see Myron and the team here from the Merchandise Mart. We love the Mart. And so when 1871 started, it had a few components. And when I say, you know, built, this is a continuum that's gone on for years and years and years. J.B. Pritzker, who was here and is on to his next adventure, was instrumental in making it possible to get a commitment from the Mart for a 10-year commitment, which they don't give readily to nonprofits that no one has ever heard of. The CEC for 20 years was really the source of the entrepreneurial community, and the idea of bringing everything together in one place was the design of 1871. And then, as you heard, you know, Jay, I like to say that Rahm takes the credit, but cash came from Pat Quinn. And so, you know, it would not have been possible but for his foresight and his support, and we're forever grateful. That brought together the tech community, the universities, all of this, the hundreds and hundreds of volunteer mentors, and a great deal of community and charitable support as well. So when 1871 started, it started with about 50 startups, about 50,000 square feet of space, and a couple of hundred members and volunteers and a whole bunch of different things, but basically a very little core, and that was in May of 2012 when we opened the doors. If you look at today, 1871 has about 500 startups. We've graduated several hundred companies. About 2,000 members come there every day. We have 800, give or take, volunteer mentors, and I'm amazed and impressed that our team, which is all sitting here, this year, this summer, made a special effort to balance, from a gender standpoint, our mentors. So we're about 50-50 men and women, which is astonishing, really important, and part of the mission of 1871. The other thing that we've done is we spend a lot of time making sure that the mentors know what they're talking about. It turns out that a captive audience is okay, but it's better if they actually know what they're talking about. So members and mentors and basically events, 1,000 events a year at 1871, 400 workshops, about 20,000 visitors a month. So many visitors that we've had to restructure the stairwells to keep people who are texting from being trampled. And so we have lanes on the stairwells, and it's worked out really well for us. We have 8 or 9 early stage venture funds. We have basically 5 schools and all 7 of the major universities represented now. And in addition, we have accelerators and incubators that are domain specific because these concentrations have been very important for us. All the technology companies are part of 1871. In fact, this is the only place in the world that has a Genius Bar that isn't in an Apple store, and we're really pleased to have Apple come and work with all of our members as well. And then we have literally over 100 corporate partners and sponsors, and it continues to grow. We just, about a year ago, I guess it's been, or maybe not quite a year, with Bosch, we announced and opened another 20,000 square feet of space focusing on IoT, which is really today it's the Internet of Everything. It's about connected devices. It's about smart cities. It's about all of that. So today, 1871 ranked number 1 in the United States, probably number 2 or 3 in the world. We expect when the new rankings come out in February to maybe be number 1 or 2 in the world. And I want to talk to you about how we did it, because how we did it, I think, bears on how every business needs to be built, how our startups work, how the process works. And so it takes a few things, and it's important to understand it. It takes a vision and a very committed team, and you don't do this stuff by yourself. So having a team of really talented people who are committed and frankly small to leverage thousands and thousands of members and companies has been a godsend. But you also start out with signing up to do things that are just short of impossible. You have to pay attention to every part of this, and you have to make these decisions in real time because you're racing the clock. This is expensive in every respect. And so it's a little bit like changing the, you know, engine on a race car, but while the car is racing around. Or, you know, I like to say that on any given day, you can catch your breath, but you really can't slow down because the pace of change and the demands are so enormous that it's crazy. And, you know, it would be easy, and I was just talking before, it would be easy to lose sight of the fact that each and every day you also have to perform. Each and every day, every part of the job has to be executed in a certain fashion and with a focus on professionalism and attention to detail and everything else. And this is not easy. And this is part of our philosophy, which is that every single job is important. There are no boring jobs. There are no trivial jobs. There's nothing that can't be made into something that is meaningful and important if you commit to the way you do it and if you support it and if you build that kind of a culture and that kind of an environment. So what have we learned from this process? A whole bunch of things. One is that democracy isn't what it's cracked up to be. Turns out that you actually need somebody to make decisions, and you can't get a committee of 4 million people to decide much of anything. It's quick, and you need to be quick. Number two is you have to enforce that. If you make these compromises, if you sort of head down this slippery slope, you discover that it's really easy to end up with something that's mediocre. And so, you know, I like to say it's easier to stick to 100% of your principles than 99% because you never know what's the 1% that you decided to phone in. And so to do this, you need a sheriff, and John Wayne wasn't available. We had Barbara Pollock, who was our sheriff. But the idea is to set up a set of objectives, a set of targets, and to make them fierce, to make them fierce. And when you walk around 1871, maybe the single thing I'm proudest of is that 5 years on, it looks like it was built yesterday, and that's because we pay attention to it and we take care of it, and it's not a place where people sort of throw things on the ground. And by the way, my team spends the entire time picking up whatever is thrown on the ground. So the idea is always the same, which is that you stick to these things. When you're building a culture, how you go about doing this is as important as the structure. It's really the meat of what's going on, and you build in that process. And if your people see, if the people you're building it for see you cutting corners or compromising or saying, well, it's not important that it's straight, it's just, let's just get it done fast or get it done cheap, those kinds of things resonate. And that's how the culture comes together. That's how the team comes together. And we're proudest of all of the fact that basically we model the behavior that we want every one of these startups to learn, and they watch us. And, you know, leadership is a contagious process, and it's one that requires passion and enthusiasm, but mostly showing up every day and working like a pig. And so this is what we do. And, you know, the idea is that if you're going to build this kind of place, what's really amazing is how viral it is, and not the social media sense, but how viral it is in the sense that when people come into a place like this, when you walk into 1871, and everybody who's been there will tell you, you experience a buzz, a level of energy, a level of commitment. You know, we summarize it by saying this isn't about wishful thinking. It's not about dreams. It's about work. And that's our culture. That's what's really important to us. And so the first lesson is really that we made a certain kind of commitment, and that's the culture that we built and the culture that we try to live by every day. Number two, and the mayor and I argue about this all the time because I believe the mayor and Alderman Moore would like to have an 1871 in each ward. Critical mass turns out to be really important because scale matters, but also these collisions, also the fact that a great deal of innovation and change and disruption occurs at the margins. And so we built the space. The MART was a godsend. You know, we looked and the team that started went all over the country And, you know, if you were on 19 different floors, you weren't an enterprise. You weren't a single entity. And so having the floor plans at the Mart has been instrumental in building spaces that are these enormous spaces. So part one was to understand critical mass. Part two was this idea that we spend a great deal of time managing the interactions of everybody. And to do that requires physical presence, and it requires an environment that's really special. And so it's opened, it's robust, and it was really important. So that's number one, is that when you bring these things together, it doesn't happen by itself. It requires a certain mass. It requires a tremendous number of people. Number two, it turns out that you have to build a real business. We call this the process of turning ideas into invoices. And so the idea is that all the Good Samaritans in the world, if we were only reliant on the goodwill of people, and it's been tremendous, and every year we have a dinner, and every year we have tremendous support for that dinner, but if that was it, it wouldn't have been enough. And the reason it wouldn't have been enough is that there are a lot of mouths to feed these days, and there are a lot of competing demands and desires. So we moved to an idea that was slightly different, and the idea was enlightened self-interest. The idea was basically that we need to deliver real value to the businesses that we deal with, to the corporations, to the sponsors, to the startups, to everyone. And we're committed not simply to building that environment, but to continue to raise the bar, to continue to iterate, to continue to introduce new technologies and keep growing this environment. You know, we're spending a lot of time now with facial recognition, and the machines are getting better than we are at recognizing faces. And if you think this is easy, let me tell you that the difference between the mutt and the muffin is very significant. It's not so easy. And so, you know, we say that we have to be at the leading edge of these things in order to be sure that our teams have all the resources that they need. And it's not an easy process. It's not short, okay? It's hard to do. It takes some time. But the goal was to build a really special place, and a place that the city and the country can be really proud of, that was both inspirational and aspirational. Because if anyone, whether it's the high school kids who come to see us, whether it's the folks from the community that come, it's all about the same thing, which is if you can't see it, if you can't envision yourself being a part of this, then it's not going to happen. And so that's what we wanted to do. And honestly, you know, I think that you don't lead except when you can show people a vision of what the world should look like, what the place should look like, and then a path on how they can get there. And that's really what we do, and that's a big part of the process. You know, I mentioned picking up after ourselves and after everybody else. You create these things, and then it turns out, much like software, that you end up signing up for a lifetime of picking up and following and being diligent and continuing to raise the ante. And one of the things that we discovered early on that's really significant is you can't write a rule book for this. You can't really have a handbook that covers all of this stuff. So 1871, again, is premised on sort of a different take. And the take is that as much as you can try to write this stuff down and explain things to people, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen until they take it on and they take it into their hearts. And so I always use the example of Chicago Cares. About 5,000 people on a given day every year in Chicago go out to schools all over the city and repaint facilities and clean things up and repair things. And it's astonishing. And so we sent a team not too long ago to do this. They went to a school that was, in fact, a STEM school. Amazing. And they were going to redo a stairwell, repaint it. And CPS, because CPS is on the button, gave them a decal, sort of a stencil, to paint this stairwell that 20,000 kids each year were going to walk through. 20,000 kids. And they sent them a stencil about math. And it only had one problem, which was that it was all these gray guys, okay? And I've lived through this, okay? So I know about the man in the gray flannel suit. I know about what the world looked like. But our team is conscientious. This is the first message, is do the work. So they started. And then, you know, they got together, and there was no supervision here. There was nobody saying, here's what you should do. They sort of said, you know what? We didn't make this trip to do a shitty job, okay? So they decided to make a different mural. And they went crazy. And so, you know, instead of sort of doing the expected, they changed the game. And, you know, you can spend a lot of time trying to explain that to people, but when it happens in the field, it's really amazing. So, anyway, I'm really proud of the team. I'm proud of sort of the culture. This is how, you know, we're going to change the city in so many important ways. So, anyway, to get back to the story, 1871 is based on an interesting idea. You couldn't write a rule book, as I said, but you can expect people to do their best, and you can point them in a direction and say, here's what we need to have done. And what I've discovered over the years is that businesses become the behaviors they tolerate. So if we say that, you know, feel free to put your feet up on the couch or feel free to do whatever, that's where we're headed, and that's not what we're trying to build. And another part of that is who you take in. And one of the things we did a while ago was add to our intake process a new question which said, how do you plan for your business to make a difference? It's not enough to make a lot of money. How do you make a difference for the people who are besides you and not just the people who are working with you? And so you have to be a little choosy, and you have to be a little selective. And sometimes you have to tell people the truth, which is that their babies are really ugly. And so we have that whole process, and we evaluate the companies, and we have an attitude about you're getting up and you're growing or you're going. That's just how it is. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we also made another really important shift, and I give, you know, Tom Alexander a lot of credit for this, which is that you can't be innovative, you can't build the kind of future and the kind of place that looks like the whole city if you're not inclusive. And people want, you know, talent and everything else. They don't get that it's a package deal. They don't get that it takes a whole lot of stuff. And so that's the environment that we've done. I'm really proud that we put our money where our mouths are. We have a program we announced not so long ago. We buy all our food from minority-owned and operated businesses. It's been amazing. You know, I mean, frankly, Domino's doesn't miss the business, but, you know, we make the week or we make the month of these little restaurants that we work with, and it's growing. We're also working with our corporate sponsors to roll out the newest technology to different schools, and it's funded and delivered to the schools. You may know, I talked about this once before, we're teaching entrepreneurship for ninth graders in the diet school. We've had the first year of results. They're showing up more. Their GPAs are increasing. The final class is always at 1871. It's just a real gas. We even support this crazy polar plunge that Jay shames us into, like, all the time. But the real bottom line is, as I said, that you never know who's going to do it, who's going to bring you your future. You never know who you're going to learn from. It's not top down. And, you know, it's not age or gender specific. It's really something that everybody can do. This is one of my favorite entrepreneurs. I love her pearls. But she went into a bank in New York City and asked to borrow $10,000. She said she was going on a cruise. And they said, well, you seem like a perfectly nice lady, but we don't lend random strangers $10,000. She said, well, I live in Scarsdale. I'm just going to be gone for a week. I'm a really good credit risk. They said, no, not so much. So she said, well, I have collateral. So they said, well, now you're talking. So she gave them the keys. They gave her the $10,000. Off she went. She came back in a week, brought back the $10,000. I think the interest was $6.10. She got her keys. She's leaving. And they say, you know, just one moment. We're just curious. You know, we called your bank in Scarsdale, and they've known you and your family forever, and they would have lent you $50,000 or $100,000. How did you come to our bank? And so she said, well, where could you rent a car and store it for a week in New York City for $6.10? So... So this is what entrepreneurs do. They look at what has always been the way that things went on, but it's different. And by the way, at 1871, we don't have all complexion challenged 15-year-old guys. We have everybody. We have career changers and serial entrepreneurs and people who want to add technology to what they do. And what's it changed and why does it matter? Well, we have hundreds of businesses. We've added tens of thousands of jobs. We're creating sort of a new enterprise in a lot of different ways. We're connecting not simply nationally, but internationally. And tech, which started at about 2% of the city's economy, is now almost 13 or 14%. And so it's recognized through all kinds of publications internationally. We're number 5 or 6 in the world. We're also very, very proud. 30 or 35% of 1871 is women. And this is the best city in the country to start a business if you're a woman entrepreneur. Completely amazing. Okay. We're also a great investment. We have better returns than both of the coasts. It's really remarkable. And the real bottom line has been that the Central Business District has become a tech hub. And the MART is, you know, ground zero for that, but so is the whole sort of Central Business District. And understand, 9 million square feet of space anchored by basically the development of 1871, and Pat Quinn can take a tremendous amount of credit for being that visionary, as can the MART, because honestly, without the support from the MART and Chris Kennedy at the time, it wouldn't have happened. And so not only 9 million square feet of space, but an enormous amount of jobs, about 163,000 jobs created. And so it's exciting. It's just beginning. I mean, this is important for our city. It's important for all of the communities. And one of the goals is really to spread it out and to push it out across the whole enterprise. So I want to thank you for all the opportunities to have been here. And I want to stop, but I want to tell you one last thing, which is about ancient Rome. It fell, by the way, if you don't know that. And we think it fell because they didn't have cell phones. Because if they would have had cell phones, they would have known that there were the Mayan civilizations and the Chinese dynasties, and they would have been a much smarter place. What does this have to do with anything? Well, we have a company at 1871 which has a trademark on a unique word, which is selfie, of all things. And it's not so magical that they have a trademark on the word selfie. What's magical is that selfie is the only word in the history of man. In the history of man, God didn't make it, peace didn't make it, war didn't make it, love didn't even make it. Selfie is the only word in the world that's the same word in every language. Now, the French think it's a French word. I say fuck the French. But in any event, but the idea is this is globalization. It was upon the rest of the cultures in the world before they could make up a word for it, before they could change. That's the speed. That's what's so exciting about the future. So thank you very much.
Howard, thank you so much. So if anybody has a question, oh, you got to write it on the blue card, sir. That's our rules here. Make it legible. Then you have a fighting chance. Okay. Here you go, sir. You see this? Okay. Matt, get one from another table. If they don't have a question, you'll have one. Anyhow, Howard, whatever you do after this, you must agree to bring your wife, Judy,
oh, that's so sweet.
To bring the sheriff, Barbara Pollock, and yourself back again.
Thanks.
Okay?
Thanks.
Terrific. First question from Dave Lundy with Aileron. What would it mean for the tech community to elect one of their own as governor? Do you have petitions in your pocket?
Well, that's a good question, Dave. Thank you. I think that, leadership is important. I think that it's something that we're excited. This, honestly, we're a nonprofit. So one of the things that it's incumbent upon 1871 to be is scrupulously impartial, except as far as Pat Quinn goes. So that's all I have to say on that.
Okay. This is from Ashvin Ladd. Outcome Health was the poster child for the Chicago startup scene. What effect, with the allegations against them, what effect will it have on the rest of the startup community with regard to fundraising and hiring talent?
Well, I think nobody knows what the outcome of that, no pun intended, what that situation will be. I don't think that one instance of anything, good or bad, is going to impact what's going on in the overall tech community. In fact, as far as, you know, they have shrunk their organization. They had some tremendously talented people. I think that's making it easier for some of our other companies to find talent. So we'll see. I was here not so long ago. I did a panel here with Rishi Shah from Outcome, and the jury is out, and I don't think we should sort of prejudge that situation.
Okay, this is from Alex Teske with AV Chicago. He'd like to know, what can nonprofits like 1871 and small tech-based companies do to mitigate the adverse effects of the FCC's repeal of net neutrality?
So I was just in New York at a meeting of about 300 technologists and CEOs, and I have to say that about half the room was on either side of this conversation. So we don't know. We don't really know. I don't think it's a black and white situation. I think it's going to depend on the nature of a lot of things to come. And honestly, net neutrality is relatively new. And we got along without those kinds of regulations for the first 20 years of the Internet. So I think it's an open question. I think we'll just have to see how things develop.
Okay. This is from Christopher Devine, who's with the Blueprint Healthcare Real Estate Advisors. Could you talk about 1871's efforts to get more women and minorities into senior tech roles?
Well, I think you have to start by getting them into tech companies, which is something we do all day long. You also have to start by creating a desire to do this as early, and this is why we're teaching it in the ninth grade. You know, what's so exciting to me is that not too many years ago, the aspirations of ninth graders in the world were to be a jock or a rock star, and today it's to be a tech entrepreneur. There's just no question, and all the rock stars and all the jocks want to be entrepreneurs as well. So if we can use that sort of momentum to make school exciting again and focus on having kids who are entrepreneurial and who can make a difference, that's the beginning. And those are kids, inner city kids. That's who we work with in these programs. And I think that's where it starts. And it takes a while. But if you don't fill the pipeline with people who want to do this and who are excited about it, if they, you know, the most heartbreaking thing in the world is have kids say that the most boring place they go is school. And we have to fix school first, and then we can worry about the pipeline thereafter.
Very good. Thank you. This is from William Marcus. He's affiliated with Only One Degree. Howard, do you have a point of view on the value of blockchain applications and their value as a disruptive technology broadly impacting financial markets? He's only with one degree. I have three. I'm not sure I understand his question, but go ahead.
So first of all, I think everybody should differentiate Bitcoin, which is a crazy sort of digital currency that's now about $20,000 per coin, from blockchain, which is a technology, and we're already seeing blockchain implemented. I can't think of an industry that it won't be a valuable and really powerful tool for, whether it's smart contracts or new kinds of security or things like that. So we're very excited. 1871 will definitely be involved in blockchain and in financial technology. Probably will not be accepting bitcoins anytime soon for membership. So.
Okay. Here we have two questions that are somewhat related, from Derek Buckingham with the Juvenile Protective Association and Stephanie Lise Emmerich, a proud and enthusiastic member of City Club. Their question relates to, how do you accomplish all the things that you have and maintain a well-rounded life? What is the key to your time management?
Okay. So there's been a volunteer to respond to that question. I usually say sleep fast, but honestly, I don't think my life is as well-rounded as it could be. I mean, we try to do a little of everything. I think that many years ago, somebody gave me this advice, which was there are three buckets in life. There's recreation, there's family, and there's work. And he said that he loved his work so much that it became his recreation, and that those were the two buckets in his life. And I think if you can do that, it's not the worst thing in the world to focus on family and then to focus on work. But our work, and I say this, you know, with Judy as well, is about philanthropic activities as well. It's about education as well. And so I think that you can do it, and I think it's just a matter of applying yourself. I think that you have to have focus, and that's one of the things we say at 1871 all day long, which is you cannot be a mile wide and an inch deep. You really have to pick a few things that are very important, and you really have to bear down on those.
Thank you. So this is from a Charlie Cam, who has a startup. He says it's amazing. He wants to know how he could set up a meeting with you to see if you're interested. I have been told that you're available before 2 o'clock at Pause on Sundays.
That's right.
Because Judy's the number one volunteer
right.
at Pause, and if someone brings munchkins, they've got a pretty good chance of...
Right. So I do hang out in the parking lot at Pause between 1:45 and 2 o'clock, hoping that there are munchkins left, but it's never been that lucky. And as far as a meeting goes, we have a whole process. And if they, whoever it is, sends in some information, I'm blessed with the world's easiest email, which is just h@1871.com. So feel free to send me whatever the materials is.
Okay. This is from Mary Osmond. She wants to know, what were some of the obstacles that you faced when you were building 1871?
You know, I think when the first 1871, the first 50,000 square feet, I think we were astonishingly fortunate that we were able to put together all of the people that were interested, and there really weren't huge obstacles. The second and third phases had a lot to do with finance and with additional support and with the concern that as a nonprofit, maybe you shouldn't have 170,000 square feet of space. And, you know, Myron can tell you about those kinds of discussions. But we were able to convince the state and our board and all of these people that it made sense to continue to grow, that it was important to continue to grow, to provide more opportunities to more people. So honestly, entrepreneurs always look ahead. They don't sort of remember how hard it was in the past. And that's, you know, I couldn't tell you about any particular obstacles.
Great. We just have a couple more questions here, Howard. This is from Dory McWhirter with the YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago. They're located at LaSalle and Madison. They have 8 other locations, Chicago and the suburbs. Gave them a plug, the YWCA. Okay. Howard, if you took one more year at 1871, what would you focus on?
So first of all, let me say Dory has been a remarkable supporter of 1871. She's been a great partner for us. We're working with the Y to push out a lot of our content to the community. So kudos and thank you, Dory, for everything that you do. So here's what I think. I think that our job going forward, the next year, is to take all of the disruption, all the technology, all the energy of the startups, and increase the work that we do with large corporations. Because for the city, in terms of economic development, we're not going to move the needle because we create 10 more little startups. We're going to move the needle because Allstate or State Farm changes the way they do business, which they recently did using one of our technologies, or the banking industry changes in important ways. So we're the exemplar, but in order to get the leverage, the scale to really matter, you have to work with the large corporations. And we've built a program over the last 2 years. We do a tremendous amount of work with the corporations. We work with Accenture and a number of the consulting organizations as well. But there's a lot more to do, and that'll certainly be a focus for the next year.
Okay, we have two last questions here. This is from Jim Terman, and
is Jim Terman here?
Jim's here. Jim, where are you?
Oh,
right
Jim.
Over there. And Julie Simon with Signature Bank. Both say you have made 1871 a tremendous Chicago asset. What is the next Howard Tolman project that you could tell us about? And Terman has ideas.
So we've discovered that the easiest way to respond to that is to say that we're going into inflatable pool furniture, which ends almost every conversation. And so stay tuned is all I can say. And thank you again very, very much.
Okay. Don't leave.